gifts one has given, why not please him with the riches one has is destined to lose at death? Purport, the word vipra means brahmana, and at the same time confidential. Bali Maharaj had confidentially decided to give the gift to Lord Vamandev without discussion. But because such a decision would hurt the hearts of the asuras and his spiritual master Sukracharya, he spoke equivocally. Bali Maharaj, as a pure devotee, had already decided to give all the land to Lord Vishnu. Today's text number 7. The Dichi, Sibi, and many other great personalities were willing to sacrifice even their lives for the benefits of the people in general. This is the evidence of history. So why not give up this insignificant land? What is the serious consideration against it? Purport. Bali Maharaj was prepared to give everything to Lord Vishnu, and Sukracharya, being a professional priest, might have been anxiously waiting, doubting whether there had been any such incident in history in which one had given everything in charity. Bali Maharaj, however, cited the tangible examples of Maharaj Sibi and Maharaj Dadichi, who had given up their lives for the benefit of the general public. Certainly one has attachment for everything material, especially one's land. But land and other possessions are forcibly taken away at the time of death, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Sarva Harascham. The Lord personally appeared to Bali Maharaj to take away everything he had, and thus he was so fortunate that he could see the Lord face to face. Non-devotees, however, cannot see the Lord face to face. To such persons, the Lord appears as death and takes away all their possessions by force. Under the circumstances, why should we not part with our possessions and deliver them to Lord Vishnu for his satisfaction? Sri Chanaka Pandit says in this regard, Sannimitte varam tyago vinase nijate sati. Chanaka Slok 36. Since our money and possessions do not last, but will somehow or other be taken away, as long as they are in our possession, it is better to use them for charity to a noble cause. Therefore, Bali Maharaj defied the order of his so-called spiritual master. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha. So these are the words of Bali Maharaj answering Sukracharya, who had warned him not to give everything to Lord Vishnu, and informing him of his decision. Thus far, since the beginning of this chapter, we've seen Bali Maharaj's reasoning. He indicates that he's religious, therefore he doesn't want to break his promise. He indicates that he's not greedy, therefore he doesn't want to break his promise. In yesterday's verse, he spoke about the necessity for truthfulness. And in today's verses, we find Bali Maharaj exhibiting the nobility of his character. This nobility marked by an understanding that this body is temporary, possessions that we have are gifts to us, and that the best thing to do with those gifts is to serve others. That to me is a definition of nobility. And it's indicated here at the end of the purport when Prabhupada says that, quoting Chanaka Pandit, since our money and possessions do not last, but will somehow or other be taken away, as long as they are in our possession, it is better to use them for charity to a noble cause. A noble cause, certainly the cause or the desire of the Supreme Lord is noble. And so Bali Maharaj is representing that to us here. Actually, I was listening to a tape of Srila Prabhupada yesterday, and he was talking about Prahlad Maharaj, who's obviously the grandfather of Bali Maharaj here. And he's speaking about him having appeared in a demonic family, Ugrajate, Prabhupada says. That's actually the words from the verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the seventh canto. Ugrajate means passionate family. Passionate family, Prabhupada translates it. But it's interesting because although Prabhupada is speaking about Prahlad Maharaj being Ugrajate, appearing in a demonic family, he goes into discussion about who Krishna consciousness is ultimately meant for. Is it meant for Ugrajate? That's the question. No, Prabhupada says that, and I'm going to read from his lecture that he gave in Mayapur. I think I was there for this lecture. But I remember it obviously from the tape, not from being personally present. So Prabhupada says, so, Mahajano Yena Gata Supanta, we learn Krishna consciousness perfectly well if we follow the Mahajans. Mahajan means great personalities who are devotees of the Lord. They are called Mahajans. Jana means person. Just like in ordinary way, in India, a person is called Mahajan who is very rich. So this Mahajan means one who is rich in devotional service. He is called Mahajan. Mahajano Yena Gata Supanta. So we have got Ambarish Maharaj, we have got Prahlad Maharaj, there are many, many kings, Yudhisthira Maharaj, Prikshit Maharaj, they are Rajarshi. So Krishna consciousness, actually, it is meant for very great personalities. Krishna consciousness is meant for very great personalities. Evam parampara prapta imam rajarshayo vidu. Actually, Shastra is not for the loafer class, he says. And so that's who Krishna consciousness is meant for. It's meant for the great personalities. And I must say that, and compliment and praise all of you, because all of you are also such great personalities. And I think that you need to be recognized for that. So I want to recognize each and every one of you for being one of these great personalities who takes to Krishna consciousness. Now, you might say that, well, no, we're Ugrajati. We're coming from passionate families, and therefore we're not great personalities. But I beg to differ. And I beg to differ on the strength of not just sentiment, but Prabhupada's instructions and the Shastra itself. Why are you great personalities? Because you have displayed this characteristic of nobility that's being described in these verses today about Bali Maharaj. All of you have given your lives for the service of Srila Prabhupada, for the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. And that's not a small thing. That is actually a very noble endeavor in life. And so you are to be congratulated for that. Now, just in case you still want to say that you're not noble, I want to point out to you that in Bhagavad Gita, let me get the verse here, chapter 7, text number 15, Prabhupada in the purport describes something similar to what I'm saying about all of you. The verse is Namam Diskritino Mudha Prabhanjante Naradama Maya Avritagyana Asuram Bhavam Ashrita. In the purport, Prabhupada says that It is said in Bhagavad Gita that simply by surrendering oneself unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can surmount the stringent laws of material nature. At this point, a question arises. How is it that educated philosophers, scientists, businessmen, administrators, and all the leaders of ordinary men do not surrender unto the lotus feet of the Supreme, all-powerful Personality of Godhead? The Gita answers this question very frankly. Those really learned leaders of society, like Brahma, Shiva, Kapila, the Kumaras, Manu, Vyasa, Devala, Asita, Janaka, Pallad, Bali, and later on Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Sri Chaitanya, and many others, who are faithful philosophers, politicians, education, scientists, etc., surrender unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Person, the all-powerful authority. Those who are not actually philosophers, scientists, educators, administrators, etc., but who pose themselves as such for material gain, do not accept the plan or path of the Supreme Lord. So I would say that those who are supposedly noble in society, but who do not accept the service of the Supreme Lord, the instructions of the Supreme Lord, they're not actually noble. But those devotees, even though they may appear to have come in families, ugrajate families, they are indeed the most noble persons that walk the face of the earth today. There's a saying, damnation by faint praise. Have you ever heard that? Damnation by faint praise. It means that faint is not, you know, soft-spoken, but it means false, some kind of a falsity. Damnation by faint praise. Actually, I heard one time, actually a very exalted personality, referring to Srila Prabhupada in ways that this phrase characterizes. This person was saying that, oh, he's so great because he went and he preached among the hippies and everything like that, and he brought these hippies and gave them Krishna consciousness. I was disturbed by that when I heard that so-called praise, that faint praise of Srila Prabhupada, because the person I felt was not really saying that Prabhupada had taken Krishna consciousness and given it to the most noble persons in society, who it's meant for, as we've read here today. Krishna consciousness is meant for leaders, such leaders and noble persons in society. But this person was saying, oh, he gave it to the hippies. And I didn't like that when he said like that, because I don't think that he really understood the greatness of Srila Prabhupada. Because just as Pallad Maharaj is a diamond in the rough, yes, he appeared in family Ugrajate, but that doesn't mean he's Ugrajate. He's the most exalted devotee. So those who Prabhupada went and picked up from Ugrajate society, we shouldn't think of them as just some unqualified persons. No. They are the most noble persons. And only someone like Srila Prabhupada could see that and go there and pick that. And the proof is that such persons have dedicated their lives, going on now, for some, for the earliest, almost 50 years. Going on now, for some, almost 50 years, have dedicated their lives. That's not something that is cannot be taken seriously. 30, 40, 50 years dedicating one's life to Krishna out of a life that many don't have much more than 30, 40, or 50 to give. And they're giving it to Krishna. They're the most noble. make no mistake about it, it's not sentiment, it's fact. And so Krishna consciousness is meant and is executed by the most noble persons in society. And so Bali Maharaj here is exemplifying that himself, and he's giving reference to the two persons that I want to talk a little bit about here today, Didichi and Sibi. Both are described extensively in Srimad Bhagavatam. And so I'm just going to read what Prabhupada has to say about these. And I think if you listen closely when I'm reading, you'll see these same two points that Bali Maharaj is making exemplified in the lives of these devotees. And what are those two points? One is that the body is perishable, having knowledge of that. And the other is how that perishable body should be used for the benefit of others. Those are our definitions of nobility. So the first is the Didichi. So this is from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 9, the appearance of the demon Vritrasura. Another time when Indra was in some difficulty in terms of the asuras, he had to fight Vritrasura, who was leading the asura forces, and they were insurmountable, and so he went to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma, no, he went to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead instructed him as follows. O Megavan, Indra, all good fortune unto you. I advise you to approach the exalted saint Dayancha, the Didichi. He has become very accomplished in knowledge, vows, and austerities, and his body is very strong. Go ask him for his body without delay. That saintly, the Dayancha, who is also known as the Didichi, personally assimilated the spiritual science and then divided it into the, and then delivered it to the Asvini Kumaras. It is said that the Dancha gave them mantras through the head of a horse. Therefore, the mantras are called Avasira. Having obtained the mantras of spiritual science from the Didichi, the Asvini Kumaras became Jivan Mukta, liberated even in this life. The Yancha's invincible protective covering, known as the Narayana Kavacha, was given to Twasta, who delivered it to his son, Vishwarupa, from whom you have received it. Because of this Narayana Kavacha, the Didichi's body is now very strong. You should therefore beg him for his body. When the Asvini Kumaras beg for Dadancha's body on your behalf, he will surely give it because of affection. Do not doubt this, for Dadancha is very experienced in religious understanding. When Dadancha awards you his body, Vishwakarma will prepare a thunderbolt from his bones. This thunderbolt will certainly kill Vritrasura because it will be invested with my power. When Vritrasura is killed because of my spiritual strength, you will regain your strength, weapons, and wealth. Thus, there will be all good fortune for all of you. Although Vritrasura can destroy all the three worlds, do not fear that he will harm you. He is also a devotee and will never be envious of you. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, after instructing Indra in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, the cause of the cosmic manifestation, then and there disappeared from the presence of the onlooking demigods. O King Parikshit, following the Lord's instructions, the demigods approached Didichi, the son of Artava. He was very liberal, and when they begged him to give them his body, he at once partially agreed. However, just to hear religious instructions from them, he smiled and jokingly spoke as follows. O elevated demigods, at the time of death, severe unbearable pain takes away the consciousness of all living entities who have accepted material bodies. Do you know about this pain? this material body, in this material world, every living entity is very much afflicted, addicted to his body, struggling to keep his body forever. Everyone tries to protect it by all means, even at the sacrifice of his possessions. Therefore, who would be prepared to deliver his body to anyone, even if it were demanded by Lord Vishnu? The demigods replied, O exalted Brahman, pious persons like you, whose activities are praiseworthy, are very kind and affectionate to people in general. What can't such pious souls give for the benefit of others? They can give everything, including their bodies. Those who are too self-interested beg something from others, not knowing others' pain. But if the beggar knew the difficulty of the giver, he would not ask for anything. Similarly, he who is able to give charity does not know the beggar's difficulty, for otherwise he would not refuse to give the beggar anything he might want as charity. The great sage Dadichi said, just to hear from you about the religious principles, I refuse to offer my body at your request. Now, although my body is extremely dear to me, I must give it up for your better purposes, since I know that it will leave me today or tomorrow. So the Dichi gave his body. That means he voluntarily accepted death for others. Pretty great sacrifice. And not just simply for others, but for a noble cause, the cause of the demigods, on the instruction of the Supreme Lord. Now just a little bit about Maharaj Sibi, and I think you'll see these same two characteristics: understanding the perishable nature of the body and its possessions, and using whatever we have for a higher cause. I think you'll find them in these activities of Maharaj Sibi also. Maharaj Sibi, the king of Usinara, was an intimate friend of Maharaj Yati, who was able to reach the heavenly planets along with Maharaj Sibi. Maharaj Sibi was aware of the heavenly planets, where he was to be transferred after his death, and the description of this heavenly planet is given in the Mahabharata. Maharaj Sibi was so charitably disposed that he wanted to give over his acquired position in the heavenly kingdom to Yayati, but he did not accept it. Yayati did not accept it. Yayati went to the heavenly planet along with the great rishis like Astaka and others. On inquiry from the rishis, Yayati gave an account of Sibi's pious acts when all of them were on the path to heaven. He has become a member of the assembly of Yamaraj. Sibi has become a member of the assembly of Yamaraj, who has become his worshipful deity. So, Maharaj Sibi has become an associate of the great Vaishnava authority, Yamaraj, on that particular planet. While he was on the earth, he became very famous as a protector of surrendered souls and a donor of charities. The king of heaven once took the shape of a pigeon hunter bird, an eagle, and Agni, the fire god, took the shape of a pigeon. The pigeon, while being chased by the eagle, took shelter on the lap of Maharaj Sibi, and the hunter eagle wanted the pigeon back from the king. The king wanted to give it some other meat to eat and requested the bird not to kill the pigeon. The hunter bird refused to accept the king's offer, but it was settled later on that the eagle would accept flesh from the body of the king as the pigeon's equivalent weight. The king began to cut flesh from his body to weigh and balance, the equivalent of the weight of the pigeon. But the mystic pigeon remained always heavier. The king then put himself on the balance to equate with the pigeon, and the demigods were pleased with him. In other words, he put his whole body on the scale and would give up his life for the pigeon. The demigods were pleased with him. The king of heaven and the fire god disclosed their identity, and the king was blessed by them. Devarshi Narada also glorified Maharshi for his great achievements, specifically in charity and protection. Maharshi sacrificed his own son for the satisfaction of human beings in his kingdom, and thus child Parikshit was to become a second Sibi in charity and protection. So that's something about these two personalities who Bali Maharaj is citing as authorities. So any comments or questions about these subject matters? Yes?
How does a devotee how does he manage a kingdom full of demons?
How does a devotee manage a kingdom full of demons? Carefully.
Does he enforce any principles? Some of these demons are strictly adhering to certain principles. Mm. They're worshiping and so forth.
Well, it's described in the verses today that Bali Maharaj spoke equivocally. He didn't answer directly that he was going to give everything to Vamandev because it might hurt the heart of the demons, it says in the purport we read today. Because such a decision would hurt the hearts of the demons, of the asuras, and the spiritual master. So, obviously, he didn't treat them and require things of him to the standards that he held for himself. So that's one thing, I think, that and it applies not only to Maharaj Bali, but to all of us. We hold ourselves to certain standards, and by our example we try to lead others, as opposed to trying to hold others to standards that we ourselves may not be able to hold. And so I think that's indicated by this the Prabhupada's sentence here, that he didn't want to hurt the hearts of the demons. So he was considerate of their situation, their attachment, their needs, everything like that. And so I think that gives us a little bit of an insight into how he managed. Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's a third case that could possibly have been cited, you know, to show the example of a full surrender a little closer to home. Prahlad Maharaj's son Virochana and Bali's father, this was stated either in this chapter earlier or in the previous chapter. It wasn't gone into great detail, but the demigods came to him in disguise at the time of his giving charity, and they said, "We have come to beg in charity from you." And he said, "Of course, I always give in charity to whoever asks. What would you like?" And they said, "We would like to beg from you the duration of your life." Mm-hmm. So he
also gave.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Are you comfortable?
Thanks for the class. I just couldn't resist adding a couple of verses which are very nice, spoken by Tadichi. They're really nice. He says, "One who has no compassion is certainly pitied by even the immovable living entities. This body, which is fit to be eaten by jackals, does no good for the spirit soul." And then he says that one who is happy to see the happiness of others and one who is unhappy to see the unhappiness of others, his religious principles are considered to be imperishable by great authority, something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice verses.
That's really
Hare Krishna.
Good. Thank you.
If you can elaborate, when does sacrifice for supreme becomes disturbance? Because we can see that other religious traditions have idea of sacrificing one's body in service to God, and I'm talking specifically about extreme people who blow themselves because their religious leaders tell them that that's the way to God. Where is the difference between people like Maharaj Shibi or the Dichi who sacrifice for benefit of humanity and the other extreme?
Well, I think that the answer lies in the verses that Adikarta just quoted, because he quoted there that the Dichi who did this also, he gave his body, but he said that it's for the benefit of others, not to kill them, not to blow them up, or not to benefit this segment and not that segment, but to benefit people in general, to benefit everyone. So that type of sacrifice, rather than a selfishly motivated or politically motivated kind of a sacrifice, I think the answer to your question lies in that, that it's for the benefit of all that one does something like this. No.
When we hear of these stories, these histories of the past, and take into consideration our present situation and our preaching mission of Krishna consciousness, how do we compare or contrast those activities in terms of what we should sacrifice now? It's obviously, that's not something that would be practical in society or even acceptable per se, but we definitely have to have a similar subtle consciousness per se of making sacrifices for the benefit of others. So how do we apply that?
Well, Srila Prabhupada has asked us to do certain things, and we should do what Srila Prabhupada asks us. If we do that, we're sacrificing our life. And therefore, I point to all of you that, you know, you're doing what Srila Prabhupada wanted you to do, and you're sacrificing your lives in that way. And there are varieties of ways in which that's done, which Prabhupada instructed. And so if we're doing that, then we can feel confident that we're doing the type of sacrifice that's meant for us in this time, place, and circumstances with whatever capabilities we have. Now, of course, Prabhupada also told us, he gave us the example of just like in deity worship. You're instructed to do deity worship, and you do like this, there's so many steps. But when you're doing it, and then some feeling starts to come, you think, oh, let me do it like this. So some bhava, some feeling starts coming, and you think, oh, yes, let me do it like that. So we'll also get some inspiration from inside, you know, how to do our service better as we do it. So the spiritual master, he gives us the activities, he gives us instructions, and when we engage in those things, we get further instructions and inspiration from him, from within, to do our service. One other thing that I wanted to mention was that in terms of this nobility, actually Mother Kuti was giving a class some time ago, I think last week or so, and she was mentioning how she saw this billboard that said, we don't take applications, only commitments. It's a Marine Corps advertising campaign. And it's quite interesting advertising campaign, because it, not only that one, we don't take applications, just commitments. So they're looking for commitment. They also have another one in the series that says cultivating a sense of honor. And then there's another one that even says that it infers that they're trying to, that you, one should cultivate the sense of something greater than oneself. And so all these things are appealing to the nobility of a person. Commitment, self-sacrifice, knowing that there's something greater than just myself that it exists in the world and that I should be prepared to die for, and honor. These kind of things, which I think correspond very closely to Bhagavad Gita description of the Kshatriyas and what motivates the Kshatriyas. And it's interesting in Bhagavad Gita, Brahmins and Kshatriyas are described in Bhagavad Gita in terms of the qualities of their work, whereas Vaishyas and Sudras are just defined by what their particular duties are. And so qualities, these kind of qualities particularly are for Brahmins and Kshatriyas. And so an appeal to these kind of characteristics or qualities of a person is something that that we can also use in Krishna consciousness. I think that if most people, maybe your parents, they would have thought, well, see, I wanted my son or daughter to go into something more noble in life, you know, but there couldn't be anything more noble than actually being a devotee of the Lord, although they can't recognize it. They can't recognize it, unfortunately, but actually the devotee's life is very noble, and these same kind of things are what we want our devotees to be. We want them to be committed. We want them to feel the sense of honor. Honor the spiritual master. Honor the great Vaishnava traditions and our previous acharyas. Honor the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And to understand that actually there is something greater than just myself. I mean, there's more to life than just, you know, me and what I want. There's the Supreme Lord's mission, and to sacrifice for something greater than just oneself is a very high virtue in life. And so these same kind of advertising campaigns could also be themes for attracting people to Krishna consciousness, but I don't know if they would be able to see it as easily as the mirage of it appears otherwise. So we'll end there. Rantarashi Madhbhagavatam.